Welcome to episode 263 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I am your host, Ian Martin, and today we're going to be finding out about the ski area of Ischgl in Tyrol. Plus, we'll be learning about the new Clean Miles campaign from Protect Our Winters. Before we meet our guest today, I'd like to thank Tyrol, Austria, for sponsoring the Ski Podcast and for making all of this winter's episodes possible. Our partnership gives us a chance to find out more about some of the 80 ski resorts in Tyrol and how you can connect with the Austrian way of life, Lebensgefühl, that you'll find there. We're also going to be finding out about one particular region in Tyrol this episode, but let me start by introducing my guest today. We have two first-timers on the show. Firstly, I'm delighted to welcome Kat Ainsworth, CEO at Protect Our Winters UK. Hi, Kat, how are you?
I'm really well, thanks, Ian. Great to be here.
And where are you?
I'm sitting in sunny Buenos Aires in Argentina, which is where I've been based for the last 3 years.
So you are recently CEO of Protect Our Winters. We'll come on to that in due course. My first thought is, if you're in Argentina, whereas we're coming into our winter, you have finished yours. Did you manage to get any skiing in down there?
I did. I got some lovely skiing in this year. So we went to the last day of the season in Chile, where there was brilliant snow this year. In Valle Nevado, and then we also went on a family ski trip to Ushuaia, right down at the southern tip of Argentina, and that's where my three-year-old got on skis for the first time, and thankfully he loved it. That's a very important prerequisite for my children.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, we might come back to that a little bit later. Secondly, I'm pleased to welcome three-time Winter Olympian and Ischgl resident Marco Ladner. Hi, Marco, how are you?
Hello, Ian. I'm doing good. Thank you. We have sunny weather and the mountains are covered with snow. That means I'm feeling well. Thank you.
Well, that makes us all feel well. What did you think of my pronunciation of Lebensgefühl? Did I get that right?
Yes, you did it right. 100%.
Excellent. And where you are just now, so you're in Ischgl. I know that the Alps have had, you know, pretty good early snow. I think it's actually been sunny the last week or so, but genuinely you can see snow out the window, can you?
Yes, I'm in Ischgl right now and the snow conditions are really good. We already got the chance to test the resort. They gave us the opportunity to do a few turns there. It was amazing.
Okay, well, actually, let's come to that because, you know, one of the questions I always ask my guests is, when did you ski or snowboard last? And Kat has actually told us already when she did that in Chile and also in Patagonia as well. Are you saying, Marco, did they open the lifts or have you been ski touring?
No, they didn't open the lift, but they put us up to the mountain with a cat so we could do a few turns to test the resort, and it was a great experience. And all I can say is the resort is ready.
Cool. Well, that is very exciting. How many of you had the opportunity to go up on this cat then?
We were three.
You really are one of the privileged few. So we'll come on to the details of Ischgl itself, but how much vertical did you get? And had it been groomed, or was this kind of effectively off-piste?
It was already groomed, so a few parts were already groomed. Of course, not all of the slopes, because they are still in construction, but the one we skied was perfectly groomed.
I'm very jealous of you and of Kat as well, who skied more recently. But I'm counting down the days now. I will be out in Tyrol myself in around a month's time, going to St. Anton and Lech. So I'm hoping that this, you know, good early start for the season will continue. A few resorts have opened early. The big dates coming up really are 22nd of November, Val Thorens will open. Then the following weekend, when resorts like Les Deux-Arts, Val d'Isère, Zermatt and Ischgl will open as well. And moving on to news, this weekend sees the first Slalom World Cup of the season at Levi in Finland. And the exciting news is, as I suggested might be the case last week, is after Freddie Carrick-Smith's debut in the GS at Solden, his older brother Luca will be making his own World Cup debut in Finland. So we'll be following that one closely. Regular listeners will know the Ski Podcast is a proud sponsor of the Carrick-Smith brothers. So we are delighted for Luca and we'll let you know in the next episode how he gets on. Right, we're going to move on to Ischgl. I mentioned that it's going to be opening towards the end of this month. Marco, thank you very much for joining us. And I know you are a resident of Ischgl and you're here to talk about that. But I feel like as a three-time Olympian, I should ask you about your career as an athlete as well. You took part in the half pipe at Sochi, Pyeongchang and Beijing, is that right?
Yes, true. Like my first Olympics was in Sochi in Russia, then the second one in South Korea, And the third one was in Beijing in China. Also my last one. But I got into halfpipe skiing without knowing it before, because I first started like normal skiing. Then I did all the jumps and everything. Like I learned skiing here in Ischgl in the snow park. And then I came super early into the halfpipe because one guy invited me once to a halfpipe. So I was addicted to it. And then I competed in my first World Cup with the age of 13 and the first Olympics with 15 years. So everything started super early.
I was going to say that you don't look old enough to have done three Olympics already. Did you say you were 15 when you went to Sochi?
Yes, like my first Olympics was with 15 years.
So that's amazing. And you learned to ski in the snow park in Ischgl. But you know, my understanding of these things is that an Olympic half pipe, a super pipe, as you might call it, there aren't actually many of them around. I've been in the one in Crans-Montana, and the walls are just ridiculously high. You know, it was scary enough for me going halfway up the wall, let alone to imagine having the speed to go off the top of it. But I'm assuming you didn't have a half pipe in Ischgl, or did you? Do you have one?
There was one back in the days, but just a small one. It's super hard to find good half pipes in general in Austria. I think there's just one good one where we train sometimes, but most of the time I spend my time in the US or, for example, New Zealand. So I was traveling a lot to reach the good half pipes.
Did you have a favorite of those three Olympic Games that you went to?
Yeah, maybe the first one was super special because I was super young and I didn't even know what the Olympics is. So I was like qualified for the Olympics and I didn't know what the Olympics are. So I went there with no expectations and it was absolutely amazing. Like everything is so different because when you're coming from freestyle sport, it's not that you do like alpine World Cups and everything. So it was the first big stage for me for freeskiing. That was super special, I guess.
And, you know, do you follow women's halfpipe as well? Because Zoe Atkin is one of Team GB's hopes of a medal. Milano Cortina. Are you following, the current athletes?
Yes, I do. I always watch the competitions. And I also know Zoe, not in person, but I know her skiing and she's skiing crazy. Like her tricks are absolutely amazing. And she's also world champion, I think. So she's probably on the best way to win gold medal in Italy this year.
Well, we'll certainly be keeping our fingers crossed for her. And listeners, I've interviewed Zoe before in the podcast. So I'll put a link in the show notes for that. But let's turn the conversation to Ischgl then. I wondered if we could just start by helping listeners to kind of understand, you know, roughly where it is within Austria and within the Tyrol.
So Ischgl is a small town based in the west of Tyrol. So if you watch on the chicken wing of Austria, you just watch to the left and then you see this place Tyrol, and in the west there's Ischgl.
Okay, well, I've looked at the map. I'm going to put a link into it as well. But if you were trying to get there, then, you know, how do you get there? What were the nearest airports or the best way to access it be?
So you can fly to the airports, Zurich and Munich, for example. If the connections are good, you can also go to Innsbruck. And from there, you take a train to Landeck. From Landeck, you can go rather by bus or by taxi, whatever you prefer. It's a 30-minute ride from Landeck to Ischgl then.
I mentioned earlier that I'm going out to St. Anton, the Arlberg, in about a month's time. And when I go, I'm going to be taking the train to Zurich. And then you can actually get a train direct from Zurich to Landeck. I did it once, actually, by accident. I was on my way to St. Anton. And I took too long getting off the train at St. Anton. Didn't get out of the train and onto the platform. I had to go onto Landeck and then get a very expensive cab back, which was really annoying. But it's quite easy to get to by train as well. And you said it's about 30 minutes from Landeck to Ischgl itself?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. And it's a high resort, right? What is the altitude of the resort itself?
So the resort itself, like my house is at 1,400 meters where the town is. And the resort goes up to 2,800, something like that.
So it's a pretty high area. And we've said that it's going to be opening at the end of this month. And famously, Ischgl opens very early in the season and with what should I say, fireworks, let's say, a very spectacular and massive concert at the beginning of each and at the close of each season, the Top of the Mountain concerts. I've never been to this, unfortunately. I know quite a few people who have, but you've had some pretty famous people appearing at the Top of the Mountain concerts.
Yes, we had like superstars like Robbie Williams or Rihanna, or top DJs like Dimitri Vegas, Mike. Like, I would say, like, for every type of music, they do almost one concert. So everyone will find probably the good, the perfect music for their taste.
Cool. I mean, I'll put a link because I found a page on the website first to all of the different people who've been there before. I mean, Elton John was one of them. You mentioned Robbie Williams there. I kind of missed Rihanna, but she'd been there as well.
If you have a ski ticket, you don't have to pay for the concert. So if you already own the ski tickets and you're skiing, you can straight ski to the stage and enjoy the concert for free. So that's pretty cool.
Why? I didn't realize that. I actually saw that tickets were for sale on the website. And I was wondering, okay, maybe you can just like, you know, sit nearby. Like some people do at the Folly Deuce, you know, they don't go into the Folly Deuce and, you know, buy drinks. They just sit on the edge and listen to the music and the entertainment. But if you've got a lift ticket, you can watch the concerts for free.
Yes. So you can rather buy a ticket just to go up without skis, but also if you want to go skiing, you can go skiing with the ticket. So you can choose if you will have a good ski day and maybe stop at the concert, do a little party and keep skiing on, or you choose to stay at the concert or you keep skiing the whole day.
Oh, so the concerts happen like during the day, during the time that ski lifts are open then?
Yes. Most of the, we have like different ones, like the opening concert is down in the valley. That's in the evening around 6-7. But the concert on top of the mountain, like the spring concert or the closing concert or the closing concert, that's the biggest one mostly of the year. It's happening at 1 p.m. So during ski day, and you can enjoy skiing and concerts at the same time.
Nice. And so who's going to be playing at the opening concert this winter then?
So this year, the opening concert will be with Rita Ora. It's going to be a big one. And then we have some good spring concerts in springtime with TJ Robin Schulz. And my most favorite one of the year will be the closing concert with the icon Christina Aguilera. I'm super excited for it.
Wow. I mean, they're such huge names. Look, Rita Ora in about a month or less than a month's time. That'll be a good one. And then closing with Christina Aguilera. So, okay, let's move on to the skiing then. You know, that already makes Ishkul sound like a great place to head to. But, you know, the skiing itself is pretty key. Now, we've already established it's a pretty high ski area. You mentioned the resort itself at 1,400 metres. What kind of size is the area there in terms of, let's say, the number of peaks or the number of lifts?
So the resort itself has around 45 lifts and 230 piste kilometres, I think. So it's pretty big. You can reach all lifts in one day if you're skiing super fast, but then you can't enjoy. So I would recommend to maybe stay for a few more days for a week and enjoy the full experience in a week.
Yeah, I mean, I think most British skiers would probably be going there for a week. Certainly our listeners in the States, you know, wouldn't be just coming for a few days. So, you know, you've got quite a big area there. What kind of skiers do you think the Ishkul ski area works for?
I think it's good for all type of skiing and snowboarding because you have like these super easy slopes for beginners where you can learn skiing, but you can also choose the little bit steeper ones like the red slopes. And then you have these steep black slopes where you can go for high speed runs. And also it's super good for free ride skiing. Actually, it's really good if you know the right places. A lot of people don't know it yet, but if you have the right spots and you have like the right guides in the resort, you will have the best time probably for every type of level.
Yeah, it sounds, Marco, like they should track you down because, sounds like you like going fast, and you know, you could knock off all those 240 kilometers in a day if you wanted to. I read again while I was looking around the website. There's a few new lifts this winter. You know, Ishkul is upgrading the lift system. I think it said there were three new chairlifts.
Yes, they built three bigger new chairlifts. It's one's the Saskaloon, the Höllboden, and the Höllkar. It's three completely new lifts, and yeah, I'm also super excited to test them. I never tried it before, but they are working really hard to improve the resort like every year. So it's always pretty cool to come up again after a new season and check it out.
Cool. And in terms of families, then, you know, evidently big ski area, if you've got teens, you know, plenty to keep them occupied. But if you're looking at families with younger children, you said they're a beginner slope. So they around the resort itself? Are they close to the resort?
So we have like a slope for super beginners. Like it's located in Maton. It's just one lift and it's a small place where you can actually learn skiing. But also in Ischgl, in the resort, if you go up with the gondola, you have straight after the gondola on the left, you see the ski school Ischgl, and there's a big place for kids where they can learn ski, have fun, also play around. So they also enjoy the first time skiing on 2,500 meters, for example. So it's not only down in the valley.
And again, looking around the website, I was just like doing my research and I saw about this kind of Lego feature that you've got in the resort. Can you explain what that is?
Yes, it's called the Lego Winter Fun, and the name it says itself, it's Lego Winter and Fun. So you have this big Lego sculptures everywhere in the resort. They also have the biggest or the highest fan exhibition on the mountain, and they also build it like a world record gondola, the biggest gondola out of Lego bricks. So it's super cool. Also, the kids, when they buy a ski ticket, they get free Legos to build maybe in the gondola or if they're tired from skiing. So it's pretty cool collaboration, I think.
Nice. Okay. I didn't know that about that one at all until just now. One thing I do know is that, you know, we've had several people on talking about the different resorts in Tyrol on the podcast now, and all of them have mentioned the mountain restaurants and said, you know, how many they are and how great they are. I mean, I don't know if it's fair to ask you, Marco, if you have any favourite restaurants, because again, the other people we said to say, well, it wouldn't be fair for me to say because I live in the resort. But what about if you're going in them? Is there any kind of particular foods that you would recommend for people to try?
So I'm totally honest with you, Ian. I'm not a really food guy because I always prefer skiing before having food. But when I'm going to the restaurant in the mountains on a perfect day, I would definitely choose a Kaiserschmarrn. You know Kaiserschmarrn?
It's been coming through as a theme. Go on. In case listeners haven't listened to other episodes, tell us what it is.
It's a scrambled pancake. But I don't want to say too much. Just if you're in Austria, go and order a Kaiserschmarrn and you will have a good time in the restaurant.
It's very interesting because, you know, Rob was on last week talking about Skivelt and he recommended it. We had Fritz on before from San Johan in Tyrol. He also recommended it. So evidently, if you're going to Tyrol, you've got to have a, say again, it's a Kaiserschmarrn. Is that right?
Yes, Kaiserschmarrn.
And also, I know off the mountain, where Ischgl might differ from some of the other resorts we've covered already, it's quite famous for its after ski or après ski. There's a lot of bars that you can go out and have a drink in. Is that right?
Yes, Ischgl is super famous for après ski, probably the biggest, best après ski place if you're in a ski town, but also beside après ski. So if you're not a big après ski type of person, then you can also have a really great time. You can avoid upper ski, for example. We can play tennis or visit the Silfretta Terme. It's a big spa place where you can do sports swimming or relaxation. You can relax. You have a sauna there. Also, if you're not a big upper ski guy, you can also have the best time in Ischgl, I would say.
Oh, actually, I was going to ask you about that term. It's like a wellness center, is it? Is that relatively new as well?
Yes, it's a wellness center. It's like a big wellness center. It's also an ice skating around the wellness center. And you can also do sports swimming there or normal swimming or go to the spa place. They have like huge saunas and everything. So it's definitely worth the visit.
Cool. Okay. Well, that is brilliant, Marco. Thanks for that. You know, Ischgl is one of those resorts I've never been to, and I have managed to go to quite a lot. It's definitely on my list. And the fact that it's relatively accessible by train, you know, because when I travel to St. Anton, I'll be getting Eurostar to Paris, Paris to Zurich by train, all pretty quick. And then they're these good connections through to Landeck. And next time I go to Landeck, you know, hopefully it'll be deliberately to go to Ischgl. Brilliant. Thanks very much for that. Okay, I'm going to turn to Kat now, if that's okay. I think a lot of our listeners will know about Protectile Winters, but just in case they haven't come across it before, I wondered if you could explain what PAL is and what your kind of mission is.
Indeed. So we are Protectile Winters. We're a climate action charity, and we exist to rally the outdoor community to take meaningful climate action. We were born from the passion of Jeremy Jones, a professional snowboarder over in the US. And in 2017, the UK chapter was launched. And we really focus on three things. The first is advocacy. And that's really about bringing together the voice of the outdoor community to take action and change policy in a way that supports the environment and ensures that we are doing exactly as our name says, which is protecting our winters. We also really champion collaboration. Of course, there's so much to do when it comes to mitigating the risks of climate change. And so we work with our brand partners, but also with our communities across the UK. And we have many snow sports enthusiasts, but also people who do mountain biking, climbing, hiking, trail running, who support our mission and who want to come together and think about different campaigns and initiatives in order to protect the outdoors. And then finally, we run carbon literacy training for students and people who want to become carbon literate.
That's interesting. You mentioned about, you know, it's not just skiing, although, you know, you're saying protect our winters. It's very much about the outdoors community. And I was watching a couple of videos yesterday. I hadn't even considered this until yesterday, literally, that if you're like a mountaineer or something like this and you want to start trying to take, you know, low carbon transport, but you've got an ice axe, it's very, very difficult to do because you can't take an ice axe on Eurostar. So all of these different things that you're lobbying about. Now, I think I'm right in saying that you're new to the role of CEO. When did you join PAL?
That's right. I joined back in August. And that was really ahead of quite a busy event season, which we're now in the midst of. So we were at London Snow Show and we'll be at Kendall Mountain Festival next weekend.
So you're based in Argentina at the moment, and I take it that you're going to be moving from there back to the UK, are you?
That's correct. Yep. So I was lucky enough to be based here for the last 3 years and then really looking forward to being based back in the UK. I'll be close to London, which is a good balance actually for the Protect Our Winters team, because we work remotely and we have a good spread across the UK. So being close to London will be really good.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, everybody works remotely. It's a lot easier to work remotely now than it used to be, for sure. And I think listeners will know that later on this winter, I'm going to be going out to Chamonix for a couple of months, and I'll be still recording these podcasts from out there. So, you know, we can always do that. I'll just ask a little bit about your background then. So, you know, PAL is like a non-profit. I take it you have a background in working for non-profits or NGOs. I don't know exactly the terminology.
That's right. So I was a ski instructor. That was my dream for such a long time. And then I went to Loughborough University, which I loved for the sport and the passion around sport. And there I really became passionate about international relations. So my career started at the UN at the headquarters in New York, and then took me to more practical hands-on work in international response, humanitarian response. So I worked in conflict and fragile zones for about 10 years and spent quite a bit of time in the Central African Republic coordinating medical responses. And actually in that role, that really was working with communities who were being affected by real climate change, having to change their livelihoods and lifestyles because of that.
I love these podcasts because you get to meet so many, you know, diverse group of people. We've got Marco there who competed in the Olympics, you know, at 15 years old, and you're working out, you know, in Africa, right at the sharp end, let's say, of climate change. But something you mentioned there, which I've got to come back to, did you just say that you're a qualified ski instructor?
That's right. Yes, I am.
You know, when and where did you qualify?
Qualified in 2004 and I was 18, took part in the base camp program, which is great because it brings everything together. So it sorts out all your accommodation, your food, and then the instruction as well. I've been skiing since the age of kind of two, So my dream from being about 7 years old was to be a ski instructor. And I skied a lot at Sheffield Ski Village. So I qualified over in France, and it really was one of the best times of my life. Really character forming in many ways. First time I'd lived away from home, and I was just in my home away from home, the mountains. And Marybelle is such a gorgeous resort. So it was great to really get to know it at the back of my hand. And then I came back and taught at Sheffield Ski Village, which was like really a nice circular moment, having learned how to ski and race there.
Oh, I mean, if you've listened to the podcast, and probably you just know this anyway, but there is a campaign to revive Sheffield Ski Village. I've interviewed the guys from that a couple of times. And in fact, you know, currently we're recording on Thursday, the 13th of November. Tomorrow and Saturday, there's actually a ski festival in Sheffield, where one of the things they'll be doing is trying to lobby for the return of the ski village, which would be amazing. But let's move on to Powell then. You know, you've hit the ground running with the start of the Protect Our Winters Clean Miles campaign. I wondered if you could just tell us about it.
We know that transport is one of the biggest contributors to your carbon footprint when you do outdoor sports. Part of our priorities, one of our key priorities, is low carbon mobility. When we surveyed our community, we found that there's so much willingness for people to use the train to get to their outdoor sports destinations. But actually, the provision of the service is often not good enough, especially when it comes to carrying bulky kit. If you're close to London, it's possible or easier to get the train across to mainland Europe to your ski destinations. But when you start to look at people further away, further north, it's really hard to actually do a multi-leg journey all the way to a ski sport destination with your snowboard, with your skis, with your mountain equipment, as you've just mentioned. And so our campaign is really about more affordable, more reliable, better connected transport, which is fit for adventure. It's really exciting how this is now coming together. We see this being a very clear ask within the government's approach to nationalisation of rail services. But also, I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to influence how many services there are to mountain destinations overseas. And what that provision looks like in terms of how you can carry your equipment.
Yeah, so part of that is evidently lobbying, but you have, in terms of helping with that lobbying, you have a petition online at the moment that people can sign. That's right?
That's correct. So we'd love as many signatures as we can. This really lends credibility to our asks and our movement. And we see this being a campaign that we run within Protect Our Winters for quite some time, because there's so much work to do. But it's a very timely ask because the government is just working on their approach to nationalisation, and we think there's a moment to influence now. So we really would like to encourage as many people to check out the campaign, the petition, and sign up, and also share their thoughts in our survey.
Yeah, just to underline that, we're not necessarily just talking about the international side of things. When you talk about nationalisation, you talk about a number of the rail franchises are being nationalised within the UK. What you're saying is the opportunity to influence them in terms of their policies about, let's say, taking bikes on board and things like that.
Exactly. So we had so much feedback from our community who we know also bike within the UK or bike to destinations that they can ski or splitboard or snowboard in the UK. And one of the biggest kind of themes of feedback is the difficulty to get a bike on a train. It's either difficult to book it on, or once you've booked it on, there's a risk that you might not be allowed on because it's not the right type of bike, because there's not enough space for it, even though you might have booked a place for it. So we really want to work in collaboration with other organisations as well that are campaigning on this topic, because it's really important for our community.
Well, you know, when I set up Ski Fight Free in 2019, the whole point there was to encourage low carbon travel. And yeah, it's a slowly but surely type of approach. You know, I genuinely believe there's momentum out there. And yeah, part of it is overcoming those beliefs that some people have that it's going to cost you more or it's going to take longer. You know, it doesn't have to be in either case. But part of it is helping people to understand that, you know, not only does it make a difference, it's actually more enjoyable as well. And I read recently that trains are more punctual than flights. You know, if you look at the data, you know, away across Europe. So evidently, I wish you all a success with that campaign. I'm going to be putting a link to that petition into the show notes so that listeners can sign up. That's brilliant, Kat. Thank you very much for that. We're just going to move towards the close now. I always enjoy listener feedback. Love to hear what you think about the show. You can leave me a comment on Spotify, Instagram, or Facebook. Our handle is @SkiPodcast, or you can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. Have had a bit of feedback since the last episode. Leon Butler enjoyed episode 262. He said, "I have such a soft spot for the whole of Tyrol, but Wildeskaiser is stunning." Stan very kindly bought me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/theskipodcast. He said, "Love the podcast. It's a great way to stay connected to the world of skiing between my annual holiday trips. In particular, kit reviews of Al Morgan and stories like Blade and Lines." I mean, that was episode 252. He also says, "He enjoyed seeing my video of driving through the Alps in a Tesla. Helpful research ahead of doing the same thing last winter, and we'll be doing it again in January." That's great to hear, Stan. And listener, if you haven't listened to those episodes yet, you can do so very easily. There are now 281 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. And in the last week, 168 of those were listened to. There is a lot in our back catalogue. Just go to theskipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to you. In the last week, around 60% of our listeners were in the UK, 20% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as India, South Korea, and South Africa. Now, in the meantime, if you'd like to help the podcast, there are three things you can do. You can follow us or subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or leave a comment on Spotify. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget, you can get an additional discount if you use the code SKIPODCAST when you book at InSportRent.com. And to make it easier, you can simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. But for now, I would like to thank my guest today. Kat, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian.
And Marco, thank you. Dankeschön.
Thank you very much. Und vielen Dank, Ian.
Excellent. I'd also like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.